Hello, this is Barbara Ridenour with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated October 19, 2018. We'll start today's reading on the front page with Manufacturing Opportunities, Eisenhower MacArthur Students Tour Local Companies. Some 300 students from the two Decatur public high schools and local manufacturers came together Thursday for the third year in a row of Decatur's Manufacturing Days, part of a national initiative that tries to raise the profile of careers in an industry that is struggling to recruit talent. A lot of our employees are older. They're retiring in the next 5 years to 10 years, so it's important that we have younger people willing to come in and do those jobs, said Kelly Runyon, Director of Marketing and Recruiting for Decatur Industrial Electric, one of the local companies that opened their doors to dozens of students from Eisenhower and MacArthur High Schools. A decreasing labor pool in the manufacturing and industrial sectors is a concern for industry leaders across the country. According to a 2015 report from the Manufacturing Institute, an industry research group, 3.5 million jobs in the sector are expected to open up, and 2 million will go unfilled in the next decade. In August, local community leaders announced a $1.5 million state grant from the Illinois Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity to train 225 area workers to fill trade sector jobs that local employers have been struggling to fill. The money will help fast-track technical training at Richland Community College to help grow the workforce and add to the skills of those already in it, college leaders said. Officials at the Economic Development Corporation of Decatur and Macon County say it's crucial that young people who grew up in the area consider the trades to help fill the need from local employers. It may be difficult to recruit someone from a larger city who's used to another pace of life, but that's why, in essence, it's important for us to grow our own talent and continue to connect these opportunities to people who are already here and in the area, said Nicole Bateman, Community Marketing Manager of the Decatur-Macon County EDC. Students also met representatives from workforce training programs and a number of companies in the area at Richland Community College, including Archer Daniels Midland Company, Caterpillar, and Ring Container Technologies. In the expansive work floor of Decatur Industrial Electric, the company's employees explain to groups of students how they repair and build massive machinery for the region's factories. We're kind of like a hospital for electrical and mechanical stuff, said Cole Namkin, plant manager at Decatur Industrial Electric. We're kind of like CSI technicians without the blood and guts, he said, referring to the popular TV series of shows that depict crime scene forensics investigations. Amidst the tens of thousands of square feet of enormous motors and industrial components, the eyes of the students at one point in the tour became fixed on something more familiar, an iPad. The work is mostly computer stuff anymore, said Brett Kunzman, field service manager at Decatur Industrial Electric, who showed students how he uses iPad apps to run diagnostic tests on equipment. It's really cool when you can bring people in here and hopefully get them excited about what you do and hopefully get them into this field, because there's not as many people coming into it. One group of juniors and seniors from Eisenhower said the careers they saw at Decatur Industrial Electric seemed like good ones, even if they didn't quite understand what they were seeing. It looks really confusing, said Ricky Caldwell, an Eisenhower sophomore. I bet it's a good deal, a good job, though. Eduardo Hernandez said he's used to seeing manufacturing work from his father, who works in the sector. He's kind of more into me choosing a different career, though, a lawyer or an office job, said Hernandez, also a junior at Eisenhower. But Hernandez said he could see himself working at a place like Decatur Industrial Electric, though maybe not in the workshop. Zachary Davis, an Eisenhower senior, said he's interested in the trades and might go to Richland Community College for vocational study. Runyon said student participants from past Manufacturing Days initiatives have not yet applied for a job at Decatur Industrial Electric, but she's gotten more questions from young people on technical careers. We just see a larger awareness of the students knowing what we do here, she said. So for me, that's a win, and they know they can apply here and work here. Ceremony. Vigil shines light on domestic violence. Candlelight service honors victims, survivors of abuse. Decatur. Carla Thornton said it was an honor to illuminate one of the two candles that burned brightly during Dove Inc.'s annual candlelight lighting ceremony service on Thursday evening. One candle burned in honor of victims who have suffered and died due to domestic violence. The other, which Thornton lit, burned to recognize domestic violence survivors. She said it was her hope that people who have been affected by domestic violence find healing and community in their lives. And for those of us who are here, maybe not having quite the understanding that we could, my hope is that an increased awareness of domestic violence would be brought about so that we could just come together as a community and make a difference and save our people, said Thornton, a Dove board member. Dove, a Decatur-based coalition of religious, social service organizations, and volunteers, has hosted candlelighting ceremonies to mark National Domestic Violence Awareness Month in October for over 30 years. More than 100 people gathered at New Vision Church at 550 North Van Dyke Street to engage in an evening that featured prayer, interpretive dance, and poetry. The theme of this year's ceremony was Not for Sale, which Dove Domestic Violence Program Director Terry Ducey said revolved around discussing the ways that domestic violence and the global threat of human trafficking intersect. The parallels between domestic violence and human trafficking have many of the same commonalities, Ducey said, such as the many forms of coercion that they use to engage the victim. These patterns of behavior include lies, financial abuse, fear, intimidation, threats, mind games, and isolation. To provide an even stronger picture of how the two problems are related, a 20-minute documentary titled Chosen was screened during the ceremony. The film was shown in place of a speaker and featured testimonies from two young women who were coerced and groomed into trafficking activities. A 2017 report by the International Labor Organization and Walk Free Foundation estimated that 40.3 million people are entrapped in modern-day slavery, and 4.8 million of them are in forced sexual exploitation. Stories like the one featured in the documentary and many other instances of domestic violence are never easy to hear, Ducey said. But listening to survivors is one of the many steps toward change and closure. The journey of healing is very challenging, she said. It's like pulling back the layers of an onion, layer by layer, for all the abuse. Overall, a victim who finally gets the courage to speak out needs to be heard. Ducey said Dove's goal is to rid the world of domestic violence so that there would be no need for programs such as the one she oversees. But that likely won't happen anytime soon, she said, and it won't happen without the positive actions of many people. As a way to acknowledge those who work to put an end to domestic violence, Ducey thanked her staff and presented awards to Decatur Police Officer Greg Clark, Macon County Court Security Corporal Lisa Fries, and Dove volunteers Liz Lehman for going over and beyond within the community. As the fight against domestic violence continues, the Reverend Dow Moses of New Vision Church said the lives lost along the way should never be forgotten. Lord, today we celebrate that even though what victims went through, you would help each and every one of us bring someone else to victory of being an overcomer, he said during his opening prayer. By the numbers, almost 65,800 intimate violence incidents were reported to Illinois law enforcement in 2014. Many others went unreported. 84 domestic violence-related deaths were reported in Illinois between July 2013 and June 2014, including 15 children. 26.9% of domestic violence homicides in Illinois were committed with firearms, significantly less than the nationwide rate. 1 in 3 women in the United States have experienced some form of physical violence by an intimate partner. 1 in 4 men in the United States have experienced some form of physical violence by an intimate partner. 15% of all violent crimes is intimate partner violence. Sports analysis. Playoff Eve is here. Football teams fight for postseason spots. To any high school football team in Illinois heading into the final regular season game with at least 4 wins, Friday night is just the start of the weekend. On Saturday, the 256-team playoff field will be announced by the Illinois High School Association, IHSA. Any team that already has 6 wins is in and will find out Saturday who and where they'll play in the first round of the playoffs next weekend. Any team with fewer than 5 wins after Friday night, the season is over. For teams with exactly 5 wins, well, that can get complicated. We'll get back to that. Football is the only IHSA sport in which all the teams don't play in the postseason. Football has been played in Illinois since the late 1800s, but there was no postseason until 1974. Before the playoffs, a 9-0 season was legendary. This year, the H&R area will likely have 5 teams finish with undefeated regular seasons. St. Teresa, Maroa Forsyth, Argenta Oriana, Monticello, and Taylorville are all 8-0. But unless their seasons end in Champaign at the state championship game, there's going to be some disappointment. More high school football fans have some idea of how the IHSA football playoffs work, but every year I talk to people who assume it's something closer to the NCAA basketball tournament. There isn't a blue ribbon panel scanning quality wins and RPI. It's a pretty simple system, really. It's not perfect, but it's hard to think of anything that would work better. If you have an idea, I'd love to hear it. My email address is jconn. That's J-C-O-N-N at herald-review.com. Here's a quick rundown. If you want more thorough explanation, go to the IHSA website. There are 256 teams that make the playoffs, regardless of size, unlike the other sports in which classification is done by enrollment at the start of the school year. Football classes aren't determined until the 256 teams that make the playoffs are ordered by enrollment and split into 8 classes. All conference champions and teams with 6 wins make the playoffs. It is impossible to make the playoffs as a conference champion without 6 wins, but it's rare. The rest of the field is made up of 5-win teams, but there are always more 5-win teams than spots available. It used to be 5 or 6 teams at the most that won 5 games would be excluded, but more schools are fielding teams, so the number easily reaches double figures now. Last year, 17 5-win teams, including Mount Zion, missed the playoffs, and there have been years that as many as 25 5-win teams didn't make it. To decide which 5-win teams make the playoffs, the number of opponents' wins are used. The cutoff is usually somewhere between 36 and 39. If there is a tie for the final spot, head-to-head competition is used if the teams have played, and if they haven't, it comes down to number of teams played that qualified for the playoffs. If there's still a tie, it gets wild. Eventually, it comes down to a coin toss. In the Herald and Review area, there are 2 teams with 4 wins and 8 teams with 5 wins. The 5-win teams who come out on top Friday can relax and watch Saturday's IHSA football playoff pairing show, with the only suspense being who'll play in the final first round. The 4-win teams that win and the 5-win teams that lose most go through sleepless Friday nights trying to figure out themselves before hearing it from the IHSA. Determining the field is the easy part for the IHSA. The hard part is pairing the teams. First, each class is split into North and South. It used to be split into four quadrants, but that too often led to unbeaten or one-loss teams running into each other in the quarterfinals and or earlier. And again, this isn't the NCAA tournament. Seeds are based strictly on number of wins and opponents' wins. If Maroa turns out to be the number four seed in Class 2A, it's not because the Herald and Review ranked the Trojans lower than St. Teresa in its top 10, or any reason other than because Maroa's opponents didn't win as many games as fellow unbeatens Carthage, Illinois West, and St. Teresa and Fairfield. Some fans love to dive in and figure out where their favorite team will end up in the first round if they have a day or two to kill, but most just want to know where and when to show up for the game. If that's what you're looking for, the Herald and Review Sports Department has you covered. We'll have the statewide pairings up on herald-review.com/sports as soon as they're released by the IHSA. And we'll get reactions from several teams and even game times if the schools choose to release that before the IHSA makes it official on Monday. There isn't a better time of the high school sports season than the football playoffs. Here's hoping we see your team in Champaign on November 23rd and 24th. Playoffs coverage inside. What Decatur area teams on the playoff bubble? You can check the sports page here, which I don't read. More online, go to herald-review.com/sports on Friday night to see all the results from Week 9, plus stories and photos from the Villa Grove Heritage at Cerro Gordo Bement and MacArthur at Springfield Sacred Heart Griffin Games. Come back Saturday. Visit herald-review.com/sports on Saturday night for all the playoff pairings and reaction from area coaches, and get complete coverage in Sunday's Herald and Review. In more local and state news, on page A3, Deonta Johnson found guilty again. Jury convicts man of murder, attempted murder, a second time. Deonta O. Johnson was found guilty Thursday for the second time of first-degree murder and attempted first-degree murder in beating and stomping attacks targeting two Decatur men who were victimized at random. Johnson's retrial Monday and the jury, which retried to consider the case late Thursday morning, took just 2 hours and 24 minutes to decide the fate of the 23-year-old Decatur man. Johnson was only 14 when prosecutors said he ran with a 9-person mob that punched, kicked, and stomped to death Jerry Newingham, 61, and almost killed Kevin Wilson, 46, the attacks coming within an hour of each other on the afternoon of August 24, 2009. Speaking afterward, Newingham's widow, Helen Dotson Newingham, and his son, Jason Newingham, thanked prosecutors and said they believe justice was done once more. It's just that it brings all right back up again, said Dotson Newingham, 63. It's very painful to keep reliving it all through multiple trials and retrials. Defense attorney Timothy Tighe requested a poll of the 12 jurors, and Macon County Circuit Judge Jeffrey Giesler asked each in turn to state their verdict. All replied guilty on both charges. Giesler then scheduled a sentencing hearing for December 6th. Johnson was already in prison, serving a combined sentence of 65 years for the crimes, 45 years for murder, and 20 years for attempted murder, both sentences running consecutively. He was convicted at his first trial in October 2011. An appellate court granted Johnson a retrial in October 2013. The three-judge panel ruled the trial judge should not have transferred Johnson's case to adult court without having first considered treatment alternatives in juvenile justice system. His half-brother, Elliot T. Murphy, 16 at the time of the attacks, was described as a leader of the mob and received a combined total of 80 years in prison. He also appealed his sentence and was granted a new trial in April 2017. but like his sibling, was convicted again, and this time received a total of 55 years in prison. Prosecuting in Johnson's second trial, First Assistant State's Attorney Nicole Cronk and Assistant State's Attorney Kate Kurtz described the murder and attempted murder as acts of mindless savagery. Newingham had been targeted first as he rode his bicycle home from work, and Cronk described how Johnson had rushed up to him and punched him in the head, knocking him senseless. As he lay there unable to move, the evidence has shown that the defendant and his friends viciously and without mercy stomped on Jerry Newingham's head, Cronk said. Newingham would linger on life support for 12 days before he died. Cronk said the mob roamed on and found Wilson, relaxing in Garfield Park. He saw them coming and tried to get away, but was surrounded. And Cronk explained how Murphy and Johnson landed the first blows before the mob kicked and stomped the victim into a comatose state and left him lying in a pool of his own blood. Wilson would spend the next 25 days in hospital, gradually winning his fight for life. We've shown overwhelming evidence that Johnson was a participant in both mobs' attacks. Cronk told the jury, "We ask that you hold him accountable." Tighe urged the jury to look deeper into the evidence, especially witness statements from other teens who had been part of the mob. When a person gets caught, he or she has a whole lot of incentive to blame everybody else, to shift blame off themselves, he said. Tighe maintained there was enough doubt surrounding Johnson's involvement to give him the benefit of that doubt and believe his plea of innocence. Reacting after the verdict, Johnson's father, Brad Horgus, said justice had not been done. He said his son was not involved in the killings, and prosecutors did not consider all the evidence. We give our condolences to the family of the victims, but we all are victims here, said Horgus, 43. Giving Back, Fruits of the Loom. Church group handcrafts 2,281 warm hats for Decatur students in need. Hats are a big deal for the person who doesn't have one when winter chill starts nipping in the air. Members of Love That Looms keeps that in mind while they craft homemade hats. The group is under the non-denominational senior ministry, Yes, or Young Enough to Serve, housed in the First Baptist Church. In less than a year, more than 50 loomers created more than 2,000 stocking hats for children in the Decatur School District. Each hat has a small card attached that explains the Love That Looms ministry. On Thursday, the group presented the hats to Maria Robertson, Decatur School District Community Engagement Director. She was joined by Allie Hamill, and Terrence Taylor, family support coordinators who work with each school's family liaison. Especially this time of year, we have so many students that we see don't have warm clothing, Robertson said. These hats are very unique and a great way to help out our students. The school district will distribute the hats with other warm weather items, including shoes, gloves, and scarves, to families in need. Each school has family liaisons working closely with their students. They will connect the hats to the children that need them, Robertson said. Before nearly 80 boxes were sent to the schools, the hats were prepared and prayed over. They will impact so many children and families in Decatur, said Michael Waltenberger, First Baptist Church Minister of Music. That hat becomes a great blessing. Loomer Penny Berry has made more than 200 hats since March, an accomplishment few can claim. I'm crafty, so I thought I'd try it, Berry said. The homemade stocking hats have been a source of peace for Berry. This summer she received treatment of radiation and chemotherapy for breast cancer. I was very sick, she said. I didn't have any focus in my life. Looming allowed her to sit and rest while she made the hats. She was able to create an average of 10 a week. Mary is happy her homemade hats are going to the schools. She has family employed in the education field, and Mary worked at Millikan University. I've always been a proponent of education, she said. If a hat is going to keep a child coming to school every day because they're not cold, I'm glad to be part of that. Phoebe Lashmet has loomed about 12 hats. We don't belong to this church, but we love doing this, she said. If I don't have one to work on, I feel lost. Members of Love That Looms not only creates the hats, they also make the pom-poms, which attach the accessories and wind the yarn. The loomers have finished creating hats for the children, but continue the process of making more hats for the Oasis Daycare Center, Dove Inc., and the American Baptist Women's Missionary Midwife Packet. Love That Looms, where it's the First Baptist Church at 1320 Arbor Drive, Decatur, when 1 to 3 p.m. Tuesdays, 4 to 7 p.m. Wednesdays, 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. Thursdays. For more information, learn more about Yes, Young Enough to Serve at DecaturFBC.com/yes-senior-adults. Again, that's DecaturFBC.com/yes-senior-adults. In area briefs, household hazardous waste event scheduled. Appointments are available for Macon County's first household hazardous waste recycling event in several years. The event, set for Saturday, October 27th, at Progress City USA north of Richland Community College, will allow residents to recycle waste such as automotive fluids, yard and pool chemicals, and harsh cleaners. Appointments may be made by registering online at macongreen.com. That's Macon, capital M, capital G, MaconGreen.com, or by calling Macon County Environmental Management at 217-425-4505. That's 425-4505. The following household items will be accepted free of charge at the collection: oil-based paints, paint thinners, spray paints, herbicides, insecticides, pesticides, lawn chemicals, old gasoline, used motor oil, antifreeze, solvents, pool chemicals, cleaning products, drain cleaners, mercury, unwanted medicines and pharmaceuticals, hobby and do-it-yourself chemicals, fluorescent bulbs and household batteries. Items that will not be accepted include tires, electronics, propane tanks, fireworks, fire extinguishers, automotive batteries, controlled substances, potentially infectious medical wastes, as well as commercial, institutional, and agricultural wastes. Residents are asked to not bring latex paint to the collection because latex paint is not hazardous and can safely be managed at a paint collection or dried and then discarded with regular trash. Information about recycling, safe disposal options for unacceptable items is available at MaconGreen.com. Again, that's a capital M, capital G, MaconGreen.com. Two vehicles caught on fire Thursday morning in a driveway at MacArthur Road. Four people were displaced from the home. Car fires displaced family. A Decatur household woke up to two cars on fire in their driveway Thursday morning, the Decatur Fire Department said. The cars were parked side by side in the driveway of a house on the 3600 block of North MacArthur Road, said Fire Inspector Mike Wigington. Both caught on fire and spread the flames to the attached garage of the home. The fire department was called to the scene at 4:32 a.m. Four people were visible inside the house, or were inside the house at the time, and were alerted to the fire by a neighbor knocking on the door. Fire department cut the power line to the house. Because of this, the four residents of the home were displaced by the fire. The estimated damage is more than $60,000. The cause of the fire is unknown. And we'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated October 19th, 2018. This is Barbara Ridenour. Please stay tuned.